The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report, the last of our mega playoff podcast editions, the Super Bowl edition. As always, our friend Cousin Sal joining us. Sal, what's happening?
What's going on, Bill?
Flew JetBlue with the kid. My daughter last night, 7 hours, forgot to charge the DVD player beforehand.
And,
yeah, long flight.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still a little rattled.
I know. Well, listen, I spent 7 hours looking at prop bets last night, so.
Oh, I want to go over some of those. Well, first, the big question, has the line moved since the last time we talked?
It has not. What did we say last time? I'm seeing 7 and 46.5 as the over under. So I think it's about the same as when we spoke, right?
I think it was 6.5 when we did last week's podcast. Right. Yeah.
Then it went up a half point, but it hasn't really been. No signs of moving off 7 either. So I don't know. You and I thought it would go close to 8, 9, maybe 9.5, right?
I thought it would get to at least 7.5 because it just seemed like people would tease the Steelers with the under. Seems like the most logical bet. Try to get these two teams to score, what would that be, 53.5 points?
Yeah, well, it's not like the two most popular bets in the Super Bowl, the favorite and the over. But I was like looking at it, and that hasn't come in since the Ravens-Giants, and the Ravens were barely a favorite. So.
What do you mean, the favorite with the over?
Favorite with the over. I'm not talking about a teaser, but like a parlay. Like
right.
Vegas loses a lot of money if the favorite and the over hits. Like, and that really just doesn't. I mean, it happened Denver-Atlanta, and then it happened Baltimore-Giants, and I think like in 15 years, those are the only two times it's come through.
So the only time this decade was Baltimore and the Giants?
Yeah, and Baltimore was like a two-point favorite. I know I bet the under in that game, figuring there'd be no points scored, and I think they were back-to-back kickoff returns or something.
I remember that under being very low.
Yeah, right.
Well, there was also there's a defensive touchdown, wasn't there? There's all kinds of weird touchdowns in that game.
Yeah, there's weird stuff going on.
Yeah.
You know,
so, interesting.
Collins, you can only expect the best. But, yeah, it's it really is great. I mean, honestly, I did spend a lot of time, and it couldn't have come at a better time. Like, hours ago, I paid off the Christmas card bills, Christmas credit card bills.
Yeah.
So, here we go.
Hey, last weekend was your first weekend without football in, four and a half months?
Yeah.
How was that for
rough.
You? What'd you do? You had to spend time with your family.
I got to say, I did. And I turned on the NFL Network, and I saw the Cowboys beat the Steelers in Super Bowl 30.
Ah.
And I was like, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, the Cowboys are the champions. This is the first game I've seen after the conference championship, so that's it. Cowboys beat the Steelers, so I was happy with that.
Was that the Larry Smith game?
No. This was the one in Arizona. Neil O'Donnell.
Yeah. Who was the guy that was that Larry Smith?
Oh,
what was
Larry
that guy's
Brown.
Name? Larry Brown, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was probably arguably the most boring Super Bowl I think I've ever watched.
Yeah, I was at the game and the Steelers were driving towards my end zone. I'm a big Cowboys fan, so it was very scary. But I mean then this lends itself to this game. I think the Steelers are gonna have, what do you think the breakdown would be? 75% Steelers fans for this game?
I just had this conversation with somebody because
you know what? Don't worry then. I'll find out who you talk to and I'll just start.
No, it's usually about maybe 35% of the fans there are neutral and don't care and don't clap and are just there because, so then they're out of the other 65%, it's usually made up of the fans from either team. And so I would say the breakdown of that would be like 60% Steelers fans, 5% Cardinal fans.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when Steelers Cowboys, and there's Cowboys fans everywhere, and it was still 70% Steelers, like they love to. I mean, it's cold in Pittsburgh. Why wouldn't they want to go to Tampa? You know, you're in Arizona. You could stay and watch it in front of your big screen. What does it matter?
Well, as we discussed last week, when it's in a a cheaper location and you have a blue-collar fan base, that's usually going to lend itself to more of the fans. But here's the catch, though, because this happened last year. And, you know, there were enough Giants fans already there. But the neutral fans will always root for the underdog or the close game or whatever the more compelling subplot is.
That's true. Yeah.
So if the Cards, you know, let's say it's like 7-3 in the second quarter and then Fitzgerald breaks a 78-yarder and it's 10-7. And I think the neutral fans swing to the Cards.
Yeah. I think they have just in general this week. I mean, your Patriots screwed everything up with that giant big win last year. Really, like, cause no one could, I mean, this should be a blowout, I think, most 8 out of 10 times, but it's not going to be because stupid Giants 8th string receiver caught the ball off his helmet and they're Super Bowl champs. So now no one wants to decisively, you know, tie into the Steelers. So I don't know.
When's the last time we had a game that was over at halftime?
Super Bowl game? Well, I forget what the Bears Colts was, but
Over at halftime, though.
Yeah, you're right. They chipped away and then Steelers.
I just think, like, we grew up with, or we didn't grow up, but, like, by the time we hit college or high school or whatever, the Super Bowl was almost always a blowout.
Yeah.
Had that stretch of, like, I can't even remember how many years, but it was almost always it was just this one-sided beating. And then that kind of shifted right around the time the Pats beat the Rams. I guess, what was the year before that?
Yeah, that was bad.
I guess the Rams-Titans was the first really cool, really close one. Well, I guess you'd say Packers-Broncos, too. Anyway, whatever. And then by the late 90s, that had kind of shifted, and now it seems like it's a competitive game every year. I don't think I don't see this being a blowout.
The silent snap counts and everything, they say it lends to that, but oh, God. It's still the Arizona Cardinals in the Super Bowl. Well, maybe we should go over these props first. And then
yeah, let's read us a couple props.
All right, well, you got to like heads this year. Heads is so due, and it's 6-0 in an election year when the game's being played in Florida. So
is that true?
No. Oh. But maybe someone will believe that and actually bet heads.
Well, it seems like tails has become really reliable for whatever reason, and I have no idea why. It makes no sense. It's a 50-50 thing.
Yeah. Well, and then the Steelers are +130 to receive the opening kick. Isn't that, are they definitely going to go on defense? Is that what they're saying? Like, they're going to go on defense if they win the toss, or?
The Steelers are +130 to receive the opening kick.
So it's basically an even bet, but you're getting odds in your favor if the Steelers receive the opening kick.
Well, that must almost mean that they have inside info that if Pittsburgh wins the toss, they would kick off.
And Arizona, if they win the toss, they're definitely taking the ball?
I don't know. It's illogical. That should be an even bet.
I don't know about that either. I don't know. All right, here's the one. And I think, listen, if you're down $10,000 this year, let's say, this is the prop for you. You have to lay a lot, but will Gary Russell score a touchdown? Gary Russell's the third string running back for the Steelers. If you say no, you have to lay $3 to 1, $3 to win a dollar. But Gary Russell's not scoring a touchdown this game, and you'll have 3.5 quarters of bliss either way. I mean, he's not getting in there. Gary Russell, Bill, as long as I know you, remember I'm telling you this, Gary Russell is not scoring a touchdown in Super Bowl 43.
Well, let's think of the scenarios where Gary Russell could score a touchdown.
I don't even know who Gary Russell is. Is this a joke? I couldn't believe when I read it.
Gary Russell was the guy that's kind of, when everybody was hurting the Steelers, he kind of seemed like he'd be that typical fantasy pickup that nobody had ever heard of who would suddenly rush for 300, but that didn't happen. And then he disappeared.
In high school, did he score a touchdown? I just think this is easy.
Are we sure that he's not there, like, fourth and goal from the 1 yard line back? I kind of felt like he was.
I remember him scoring a touchdown. I feel like we've watched every Steelers game this week with Damashek and everyone else. I don't remember this guy.
Well, I guess, wouldn't the scenario be maybe if they're up by 3 touchdowns?
Yeah. They'd have to be blowing him out. So, I mean, there's a... Otherwise, I don't think he's in there at all.
So you're going to recommend that one. That gets your stamp of approval.
I like that. I'm telling you.
-3 to 1. Okay, on some of these illegal offshore websites, you can actually tease the prop or parlay the prop bets.
Yeah.
So you can parlay the Gary Russell won't score with something else.
Yeah, like Newcastle Sunderland total goals +1.5 versus Heath Miller receptions.
Is that on streak for cash right now, or is that a real bet?
Yeah, no, you could do that. If you have a streak of 43 games, this is probably what you want to go with.
Right, quick sidetrack. Streak for cash is like the greatest thing ESPN.com's ever come up with, right?
So this is what you pick a game every
Oh, it's addictive. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's really good. I've gotten a five, and that's the highest I've gone.
Five games in a row. They're basically even, right? They let you bet the spread or what?
You even have a little bit more of an advantage. Like sometimes with the NBA, they'll have a four-point favorite, and you can pick it for even.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, back to the Super Bowl bets.
All right, back to Newcastle, Sunderland. No, you know what? There's a lot of Celtics.
Oh, because the Celts are playing.
They're playing the T-Wolves on Sunday. Where is it? Did I lose this now? I can't find. Oh, for crying out loud! I don't know where this. I'll find it, but.
So stuff like Will.
Oh, here it is. Okay, so like the largest lead in the T-Wolves Celtics game versus Cardinals points, and it's even.
Wow.
So they're basically saying 20, I guess, is the number they're banking on for both.
Well, what is the Cardinals over/under bet for points?
That's it. It's 20.
Okay.
So.
The T-Wolves have been playing well lately. I kind of like the Cards in that one.
You would take the Cards point?
Yeah, the T-Wolves, they changed coaches about 4 weeks ago, and they've been playing really well with McCall.
Oh, see, this is where it gets fun. It really gets fun. Really
I like that bet.
Kendrick Perkins points versus Jeff Reed points, Steelers kicker.
That's a real bet?
Yeah.
I think I like Jeff Reed.
Ray Allen made three-pointers versus Kurt Warner, touchdown passes plus interceptions.
Oh, Warner.
Warner, that'll be about three, four, you're saying?
Yeah. Ray Allen makes one or two a game. Like he's, you know, especially if they're blowing out Minnesota.
Oh, I love this.
It's so good.
Garnett points plus 6.5 versus Steelers Cardinals first half points.
That's stupid. I love the Gary Russell bet. I think we should spend another 20 minutes analyzing it.
Gary Russell.
Imagine having that bet. It's great.
I'm telling you, you bet 21 weeks and then you come down to having a ton of money on Gary Russell. It's the American way.
Well, think how exciting it would be every time he came in the game. $3,000 at Gary Russell not scoring.
Oh, we'd have to learn his number and everything.
Oh, my God. All right, what else?
Oh, here's one. 5-1 odds in the post-game interview, Kurt Warner blames God for the loss. 10-1, he blames God for being married to a woman who works as a stunt double for Ivan Drago.
Wow.
No.
That was prepared material.
No, that's written. I'm telling you. I spent a lot of time.
What's the best Kurt Warner prop?
I don't know. I don't know what. Let's see. I mean, do you think he'll have a good game?
Why wouldn't he? I mean, haven't we learned that the course of the season doesn't matter anymore? Like, just what's happened recently is the only thing that really matters in the NFL?
I'll read these off. What will he throw first, a completion or an incompletion interception? Incompletion interception is plus 150. That's rough. Will he throw an interception? Yes is minus 220.
Wow.
Total rushing yards on first attempt, a half a yard.
What is the – do you have the odds for will Polamalu pick a pass off or not?
Yeah, I did come across that. I'm trying to find it. By the way, I think 10-1 for Polamalu at MVP is not bad.
When's the last defensive MVP we've had, though?
Well, it's been a while, but I think – here it is. No, he will not intercept the passes, minus 220. Yes, he will, is plus 170.
Plus ones, and he might pick off probably like 7 a year.
Yeah.
So the odds are actually pretty good.
Here's a Polamalu one. During the halftime show, 35-1, he lets down his curly ponytailed hair in front of a billion people, a la Janet Jackson, reveals he has breasts. That could happen.
You know, he has a strange effect on female viewers.
He does.
We're fascinated by his hair. Yeah, there's never been a casual non-football fan female viewer who hasn't been transfixed by his hair. Well, wait a second though. You mentioned like the Polamalu MVP odds. Roethlisberger's been really not playing that well. He had a terrible game, game 2 weeks ago, and we had to hear about how he managed the game and all that crap. Meanwhile, he stunk for three quarters.
Yeah.
If you think Pittsburgh's going to win, maybe not a bad bet to go off the board with somebody. Like,
yeah,
what's Santonio Holmes?
I like all those guys. Like, they're all like 15-1. Let me find it here. There's a million pages.
I just picture you in your desk right now with, like, just 50 pages of printouts.
I'm in heaven here.
Yeah.
I always say I'm not going to get sucked in, but these props are so great. And then you throw Newcastle in there against some stupid soccer game.
It was Sunderland?
Yeah.
Like, Santonio Holmes is not a bad off-the-board bet. What if he returns a punt for a TD and catches one deep ball? And
yeah, that's true.
Four catches for 100 yards with a TD and a punt return TD.
Yeah. All right, hold on. I'm getting it right here. Okay. Yeah, I think the receivers. All right, Big Ben was plus 175 to win the MVP.
I don't think that's a good bet.
The only thing is he had nine completions in the last Super Bowl. If anyone has something to prove, it's him, right?
I know, but do we even think he's good?
Well, he throws it. All right. Well, Hines Ward is 15-1. Santonio Holmes is 15-1. And Polamalu are 10-1. Those are the others I circled.
What about Willie?
Those aren't bad. Willie Parker's 7-1.
So Polamalu's only 10-1.
Yeah,
I kind of like that one. I think if you do Polamalu and Santonio Holmes.
Holmes and Ward, not bad.
Yeah, but what do we know about? Is he hurt?
Who won it when they beat Seattle? I forgot to look that up.
They beat Seattle. I think the referees won that. It was a 12-person MVP. Everyone at Seattle's so fired up right now. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that.
There
Thank
you.
You.
You get a free latte wherever you want.
Yeah. Is there any, like, totally off-the-board Steeler MVP? Like, what is, like, Lamar Woodley?
Let me see. I'm trying to find
or James Harrison. They should also have a bet
Nate Washington's 40-1. James Harrison 30-1. Farrier is 30-1. Heath Miller is 30-1. But you know he's concentrating on beating that soccer game.
They should have a will there be co MVPs bet. Well, would be an interesting one. I kind of like the Nate Washington one too for 40-1. Because they throw to him deep twice a game. What if he caught two long balls?
You got to catch both of them.
Two catches for 110 yards and two TDs.
Yeah.
Although I guess they'd probably give it to Roethlisberger.
I like those three. I like Ward, I like Holmes, and I like Polamalu. That's what I would go with.
You don't like Holmes? Oh, you do like Holmes.
Yeah, okay. I like the two receivers and Polamalu.
What's Fitzgerald?
Fitzgerald is... I think he was like 7-1 or something. Turn off the page. This is ridiculous.
Because, like, if you look at the Cardinals, their three playoff games, he is probably the MVP of second and third round. I can't remember what happened in the first round. They played Atlanta.
He's only 5-1.
I don't remember who would have been the MVP in the first one, but the second and third round, he's definitely MVP.
Well, he had over 100 yards, and he had one or two touchdowns against Atlanta.
Well, but Bolden had that like 71 yarder against Atlanta. Like, I don't think it was a clear. You probably might have gone with Warner actually.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, Big Ben's plus 175. Kurt Warner's plus 250, and then I believe Fitzgerald's third at 5-1.
Warner's not a bad play. Like, what's the Cards money line?
Plus 210.
So that's weird. So the Cards money line is plus 210, but Warner's only plus 250?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that because Fitzgerald could get it too.
Right. But Fitzgerald's not a bad, if you think the Cardinals, if your hypothesis is that the Cards win the game.
Yeah.
Why not jump for the extra odds with Fitzgerald?
So Fitzgerald, Ward, Holmes, and Polamalu is maybe what I'd go with. Because I think you're taking the Cardinals, right? I know you can't say till Friday because it's a big deal.
No, I really don't know. I really want to find out if Hines Ward, if he's going to be limping around or not. They've been pretty quiet.
I think these 2 weeks off, it benefits the Steelers in every way.
Totally.
Ward, they at least have to cover him there. They at least have to put a man on him. You know, he has a chance to heal. And I think, like, momentum shifts this way. Like, obviously both teams are on a roll, but if they come down to earth, the Steelers are better, and maybe even a lot better. And everyone's going crazy about, like, Warner's Super Bowl experience. It was, like, the biggest choke job in Super Bowl history last time he was in the big game. So,
On the other hand, my counter would be that it gives everybody a week longer to talk themselves into the Steelers, thus opening the door for the nobody believed in us factor for the Cardinals.
Oh, really? See, I think it's the other way. I mean, look at just what we were talking about. We thought that game would go to 9 or 10 or whatever, and now all I'm hearing is how the Steelers are going to win and cover.
But that doesn't that, if everybody's saying that.
Not the Steelers. I mean the Cardinals.
So you're saying people are now talking themselves into the Cardinals.
That's what I'm saying. I'm hearing, I mean, media days today, and we'll see. I think they have a lot of juice right now.
Well, we probably have to wait to see if there's a distraction this week.
Yeah.
Like, what if one of the Steelers linebackers, like, pulls a Eugene Robinson or...
Right.
That's always interesting. I'd like to see a coach get involved in one of that. We haven't had a coach get involved in a Super Bowl week
scandal. Yeah, Dick LeBeau looks like he could just go off. I mean, that guy's he's up for Hall of Fame and everything. Wouldn't he want to stop Larry Fitzgerald, even if he has to come on the field and grab him by the ponytail or whatever?
How great would that be, a Dick LeBeau hooker scandal? I think that's my number one choice for Super Bowl week. 72-year-old defensive coordinator, Dick LeBeau.
Oh, and he's got the name and everything. That's a good porn name anyway.
Yeah, Dick LeBeau transvestite sex scandal the night before the game. I think that rocks the Steelers. I really do.
Well, as long as it's not Gary Russell, because that's my man on Sunday.
I thought that was funny in Peter King's column when he went through LeBeau's credentials for the Hall of Fame and then picked him.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a Hall of Fame resume that Peter King turned down?
No. No, everybody would. He Hate Me would be in if we were.
Jay Novacek, you name anybody. Tony Eason, he's in. He had a good year.
Yeah.
Any other classic Super Bowl props that you like?
That's about it. There's this guy, Ahmad Nivens, on St. Joe's, and it's his points and rebounds versus Warner pass attempts. I just wonder what goes through this guy's head. Yeah, I looked him up. Like, he's a decent player, but St. Joe's is 10-7. Like, who cares already?
So, do you want to get to? Should we get to the point of the podcast where you make a pick?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
I'm telling you, this is. I think. Look, like I said, the Giants won last year because the guy had a sticky helmet or whatever. So screwy things happen. But if this game is played on a neutral field 10 times in February, I think the Steelers win and cover 7 or 8 of them. I really do. I think it's 27-13. I like the under, and it's a crazy year. But they're playing at home. Their fans are sick of freezing, and they're going to go out there and they're going to take care of business. And I think it's going to be tough for Warner to score points. I really do.
I'm leaning toward more towards that than the other scenario, which would be the Cards just being able to throw in them, and Fitzgerald making a play and Roethlisberger not doing well.
Yeah. Do you know what a benefit it is to have a guy who could cripple anyone he wants at any time, and no one really could say anything? He can't even get a fine. I mean, that's
Ryan Clark, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
What did you think of the whole, everybody saying that, like Damashek, our friend, claiming that that was the hardest-hitting game in football history? Did you feel that way when you watched that? I know there were some hard hits, but did you feel like you were witnessing history?
Well, because the game was like 4.5 hours long, I felt like falling asleep at times. But, it looked pretty rough. He was at the game, so of course he's going to say that. I would say the Ravens hit the Steelers harder. Would he agree with that?
It was definitely a hard-hitting game, but I never felt like I was witnessing history.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen a harder-hitting game.
I mean, would he have said that if it was 17-16 Ravens, if they had won, and Flacco didn't?
If that guy didn't commit that stupid penalty, that could have been the result.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you probably have this one pegged. I gotta see. I really want to make sure Hinesworth is healthy, because once he left that game, the AFC Championship game, the Steelers really did nothing offensively.
Yeah. But
so
don't you think at the very least they have to put Cromartie, they have to put their best guy on Hinesworth? I think he'll be able to run, right? Even if it's just a decoy, I think they're gonna have to cover him, and Holmes will be left open, or something will happen.
So where are you at?
I'm more for the Steelers' defense. I think there's gonna be tip passes and hard hits, and Warner's not gonna know what hit him, and it's gonna be hard for them to score 2 touchdowns.
Well, we saw the Eagles, whatever adjustment they made, and they just started hitting him every play.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a while.
They play like the Eagles did in the second half. I don't think this is a game.
And the other part is the Steelers really haven't given up, you know, three touchdowns in a game. I don't even remember. You'd probably have to go back to, like, September. But they've consistently been 14 points or less.
Well, also, as far as the spread goes, they beat, and I know it's a weird ending, but they beat the Ravens by 9. They beat San Diego by how many? 2 touchdowns or a little less? I mean, they're pulling off basically double-digit wins.
So we recommend maybe a tease. If you like the Steelers, a tease of the Steelers in the under?
I guess the under. I know there's some...
53 is a lot of points.
Yeah. Well, I say 27-13. So, yeah, I'm definitely recommended. Steelers and under should be easy.
All right.
And Gary Ruff, for God's sakes, he's not scoring.
So you got... So you like this a tease with the Steelers in the under, a parlay with the Steelers in the under, and Gary Russell -300 not to score. Those are your three recommendations. Okay.
That's it.
All right, Cousin Sal, I'll talk to you next week. Hey, one more thing.
Yeah.
On Jimmy Kimmel Live, you guys finally moved into the 21st century, and now you have this whole YouTube playlist.
Oh, you saw that, right?
I did. Congratulations.
I haven't checked it out.
That should have happened 2 years ago.
Well, why didn't you suggest it?
I may have. I think I may have sent an email to your cousin who didn't do anything.
Well, what happened? I mean, you may have helped, but what happened is my Uncle Frank stormed into Jimmy's office and said, hey, we got to get with the times. He showed him how to work this YouTube thing. He said, this is going to be our thing.
So you can, I think it's Jimmy Kimmel Live is the YouTube name, or the YouTube username. You can find it, but it's got all the clips, including your cousin's emotional farewell to Vitras, the security guard, where he did not cry.
He got
even though it was he didn't cry though. You said it was -650. He cried. He did not cry.
He did get choked up, but I think he had free reign since you wrote 800 paragraphs about your dog who passed away. So he was either way he was going to be okay.
You know what the odds you should have put down were: will Jimmy do the thing with his jaw and then make the self-conscious look at Cleto to regroup and then come back to the camera, I think would have been -500.
Listen, she's going to be missed, and we're celebrating at Hooters this Saturday. I'm not even kidding. We are.
No. Are you really?
Yeah, we are.
I mean, Ted, that was a legitimate loss for the show. She was in a lot of things.
She was great. She was a great character and a very, very nice lady. It's good to know her.
Well, that's too bad. All right, we'll talk to you
on
this.
Way to end the podcast on a downer, Simmons.
Well, it's a major member of the show. She died.
Gary
it's depressing.
Gary Russell. Gary Russell. That's the only name you should know.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
See you later, man.
Bye-bye. All right. Time to bring in our favorite numbers guy. We held him off last week. He was in the bunker coming up with numbers, crunching them, trying to figure this game out. Aaron Schatz from footballoutsiders.com. What's happening?
Are you as unenthusiastic about this Super Bowl as I am?
Oh, it's just because the Pats aren't it.
No, it's not really. I mean, I was way more excited for the Steelers, Seahawks, and for the Colts and Bears, even for the Bucks and Raiders, really.
I think Colts-Bears is my least favorite one.
I just feel kind of like it's so tough because given what I do, the point is to analyze teams based on how they've performed in the past. And with the Cardinals, you have no idea which Cardinals are we supposed to be talking about here.
Right.
So at least with the Steelers, I mean, they're the same team that they've been all year. They're pretty consistent all year long. They do the same things well. They do the same things badly. Things don't really change with them. With the Cardinals, it feels like it's been like four different seasons for them, so you're not quite sure what to analyze.
Have you figured out a way to just go off playoff numbers and that's it? I mean, what do you do?
Well, I mean, that's such a small sample size that you don't want to really say for sure, you know, this is exactly who this team is. You'll end up trying to judge third down performance based on five plays or something.
Right.
One thing I did is I looked at the Arizona season and I split it into four parts. You know, the first part was when they were playing really well early on before their bye week. They were like fourth or fifth in our ratings before their bye week. The second segment was in the middle where they had a couple of losses to good teams and then they beat the teams in their own division but only by like a touchdown. And I'm not sure, you know, beating the 49ers and Seahawks by a touchdown isn't really that special. Mm-hmm. The third was that, you know, where they were horrible. And the fourth segment was the last regular season game where they kind of got their act together and then the playoffs. And for the most part, they actually have been roughly the same team except in that part where they were losing all the games, like the one to the Patriots that they lost by 5,000 points.
Yep.
They've always had a good passing game, except, you know, when they were losing those big losses. They've always had a good run defense, except when they were losing with those big losses. The big change in the playoffs that had never really been the way that they were, even in their early successful weeks, is the pass defense. Their pass defense in the playoffs has been much better than it was even when they were winning games early in the season. You know, like when they beat the Cowboys.
Yep.
So that's really the thing where I think we look at the Super Bowl and say, which Arizona pass defense shows up? The interesting thing is the pass rush has been better in the playoffs, but really not that much better than it was early on in the season. The thing is that their pass rush kind of went into a hole in the middle of the year. They were getting a lot of hits on quarterbacks. The Cardinals were like sixth or seventh in quarterback hits, but they weren't getting a lot of sacks for most of the year, and the sacks kind of have come back in the playoffs. But the thing is that they combine that with better coverage that they didn't have early in the year. I know a lot of people think that's Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, but based on our charting numbers, he's not like the second coming or anything. I think people are acting like this guy is, you know, the next Pro Bowl cornerback, and for all I know, he might be, but he's not yet.
He's got a cool name.
He does have a cool name. Yeah. He has a nice long name, and he's got a good story, you know, coming out of a 1AA school. But, you know, he's really not been – he's been a good cornerback since he went into the starting lineup, but certainly not a great one. Roderick Hood is fairly underrated, although he's clearly the guy that teams target. Bill Barnwell went back and watched the Minnesota game. That's the game where Tavares Jackson threw four touchdowns on them.
Mm-hmm.
And three of those were against Hood. And it's not that Hood was playing badly on those plays. It's just it was clear that Hood's the guy that other teams target.
So that is what might happen.
Yeah, weekend. I mean, listen, I think that their pass rush will get to Roethlisberger because pass rushes get to Roethlisberger. That offensive line is just not that good, and he holds onto the ball too long trying to make miracle plays happen. And by the way, sometimes he does, but they'll probably take him down. But I think a lot kind of depends on how well the cornerbacks play because the pass defense is the big difference in the playoffs. And we know that Roethlisberger, you know, when he gets the ball, that they've got good receivers. So I think a lot depends on how well those corners play and how healthy Hines Ward is.
Well, the defense, is there any way to figure out Arizona's defense at home versus on the road? Because I do wonder how much of how they played in round one and round three.
Well, they're better at home, but but then the question becomes an egg and chicken problem.
Yeah.
They're better at home, but for the most part, they're big honking losses were on the road.
Right.
So how much do you discount that as they didn't try hard against the Eagles on Thanksgiving night and the Patriots in the snow? How much of the difference?
And the Jets.
Well, the Jets is early in the season. So
yeah.
if we can't count that Jets game as representing who the Cardinals are, then we're really throwing everything out the window. I mean, that was early on. But the only really bad loss that took place at home was the one to the Vikings. So, you know, how much of that difference between their defense at home and their defense on the road is that they were kind of sleeping through the Eagles and Patriots games?
The Carolina game is the interesting one because that's going to be the game that is the most similar to the Sunday game. They're on the road. This Super Bowl is basically going to be a road game for them. It'll be
well, if it's anything like
Steelers
it 3 years ago when Detroit was basically Pittsburgh for a week.
Yes. And then you remember what happened that game. Carolina goes up 7-0. Arizona comes back and scores. There's some DeLome got stripped. Cardinals score again. DeLome then just completely falls apart. I don't know how much the Cardinals defense had to do with that.
No, I don't know either. And as much as Roethlisberger can have bad games, I can't see him going into the tank like that. I think I said something to you before the conference championships about looking back at teams that had that many takeaways in a playoff game and that it just doesn't happen twice.
Well, that was my next question. What do you see? What did you guys always keep track of those luck stats? Do the Cardinals and those luck stats and all those variables, how do they rank?
Well, I don't normally consider interceptions to be luck.
I mean,
the fact is certain teams get more interceptions. Certain players get more interceptions. Certain quarterbacks throw more interceptions.
Fumbles,
I don't see it
though.
As luck. A six-interception game, on the other hand is a little off the wall.
Right.
Fumble-wise, they haven't particularly had great luck in the playoffs or anything. I will say that the difference between this game and Carolina is that for all the people want to think of Pittsburgh as a running team, this is a pass-first team.
Agreed.
This is a team with a mediocre, if not below-average, running game.
Yep.
And a good passing game. With where Carolina has one good receiver and one receiver who happens to be good at blocking. And their thing was the run, which is why we were so just shocked when they kind of went away from the run so early on in that game. Pittsburgh will pass. They're not depending on the run to beat Arizona. That was Arizona's best defensive performance of the season by far, was against Carolina. And what's interesting is, as good as their defense has been in the playoffs, that based on our numbers in the NFC Championship game, their defense actually had a below-average game. It was their offense that won that game because the Philadelphia defense kind of imploded in the first half.
And if you look at what the Steelers' offense did against Baltimore, what did Roethlisberger finish with, 9 completions? Something like that?
I'm not sure.
The last drive? It was something. His stats were terrible, basically. And the one key play that he made was that weird play where he scrambled around, he threw it. I forget which receiver it was, Holmes?
Right, that's him making a play.
It was him making a play, but it was also him really not making a great throw. It was such an unorthodox throw.
The guy
throw.
Happened to be open, and I believe it was Fabian Washington, slipped on the grass.
Yeah.
And that left Holmes open, and so he could run for a while. But when you look at the quality of the Baltimore defense, and you do our little opponent adjustments, Pittsburgh actually comes out with average offensive performance for last week because Baltimore's defense was so good you don't expect a team to, you know, complete that many passes against them. Mm-hmm. I think that Arizona's defense, even if it's playing better, it's not as good as Baltimore's. And I'll say this, even if we only looked at the playoffs, Pittsburgh would have a higher DVOA rating than Arizona. Pittsburgh in their two games would have a higher rating than Arizona in their three.
I do worry about Pittsburgh offensively, and it does seem like they had some help in the playoffs with some unorthodox plays.
And I'm worried about Hines Ward's injury.
And Hines Ward, we haven't gotten to that yet. But just like, you know, if you're relying on one bomb a game to come through, sometimes the bomb doesn't come through. If you're relying on one big special teams play a game, sometimes the special teams play doesn't come through.
Well, especially if you're Pittsburgh. I mean, for Pittsburgh to have two good special teams games in a row is really weird.
Yeah.
They have not been good special teams for years now. But then again, I mean, Arizona in some ways depends on that, too.
They've
just
more
got
reliable,
more than
though.
One of those big plays per game because the guy they're getting it to is Larry Fitzgerald. He's playing out of his gourd right now.
Yeah, it's more reliable. And, you know, as you brought up Hines Ward, I just thought they fell apart when he came out of the game.
Yeah.
If he's not totally healthy or if he gets dinged up in the first quarter and you've picked Pittsburgh given 7, you're not feeling good.
No, I agree. I think Hines Ward is important to them. You know, I mean, on the other hand, the fact is, as good as the Cardinals' offense has been, based on our numbers at least, Kurt Warner doesn't have trouble with blitzes, but he has had trouble with zone blitzes where you're not sure who's coming. And we don't end up tagging a lot of Steelers' plays as zone blitzes because they don't drop linemen into coverage that much. But with a 3-4 defense, every play is sort of a zone blitz because you never know who's coming. I mean, you could be pretty sure that those three linemen are coming, but Pittsburgh rushes 5 more than almost any other team, and you never quite know who the other two guys are going to be. So I think that it's not necessarily Warner that's going to have this problem, but the offensive line may have a problem here identifying where the pass rush is coming from, and that could lead to a lot of pressure on Warner. And as good as Fitzgerald is, if Warner's running for his life some of the time from Lamar Woodley and James Harrison, it's hard to get him the ball.
Our friend Mike Lombardi did a really good job last week of explaining what changed for Philly's defense in the second half. And he said in the first half, Philly's D just overloaded one side and Arizona was ready for it and they just hit all the seams. In the second half, Philly decided not to do that and came at Warner from all angles. And, you know, three drives. It was like 6 plays, 3 plays, 3 plays. For whatever reason, Arizona was able to get whatever momentum back on that last drive. But you got to think Pittsburgh studied the tape of that.
I would think so. And listen, they come from all angles in general.
Yes.
That's how they play their pass rush. And that offensive line for Arizona, I mean, it's pretty amazing that they've played so well this season on pass protection, at least, and in the playoffs. But come on, Mike Gandy, Reggie Wells, are these guys exciting anybody? I mean, not really. This isn't known as, like, you know, one of the best lines in the league when it comes to making adjustments against a pass rush that comes from lots of different directions. So, you know, I definitely see Pittsburgh getting there. The question is what happens behind that, because Pittsburgh plays lots of cover three behind the cover three behind the blitzes, and as we learned a couple weeks ago, don't play zone against Larry Fitzgerald. Don't
right.
do it. And also, their biggest corner is Ike Taylor, so you wonder whether would they want to put Ike Taylor up more against Bolden, that Bolden's more of the physical middle of the field receiver, and then, I don't know, double Fitzgerald with McFadden and Ryan Clark or something? I don't know.
Give us three predictions.
Oh, three predictions. Golly.
Or give us two predictions, or even one.
Edgar and James will have a lousy game.
I agree.
Pittsburgh's run defense is really, really good.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened last week, because Philadelphia's run defense was really, really good too. But if you noticed in the second half, the edge wasn't getting anywhere.
No.
They had one big run in the second half, which was when Hightower went outside on that fourth and one. And once he was able to turn the corner, he got a few yards because, you know, they were trying to stop 1 yard. They weren't trying to stop six. But for the most part, I think that last week we saw in the second half that Arizona went back to having a poor running game. And I think against the Pittsburgh defense, it's just going to be hard to run the ball.
So who do you think wins?
Well, listen, I have to say Pittsburgh, because based on the numbers, they are the better team. They've been the far superior team during the regular season. Even during the playoffs, they've been the better team, although only by a small amount. And I am worried about the Hines Ward injury. But Pittsburgh is the better team. They have more talent. They've played better even in recent weeks. So I think you have to pick them to win. I mean, I realize people think I'm weird about this, but I don't think it's a good thing if the Cardinals win this game. I think at a certain point, it's not the Cardinals that are the problem. It's how many times can you have sixth seeds winning the Super Bowl before the regular season starts looking dumb?
Mm.
It's not the Cardinals that are the problem. It's not this one that's the problem. It's the whole last 4 years with teams playing differently in the postseason compared to how they played in the regular season that's the problem. Any one of those years on its own, to me, doesn't make the regular season look useless. But together, it forms a trend where if the Cardinals win the Super Bowl, then based on point differential, three of the four worst Super Bowl champions will be these last three.
Well, you mentioned to me in an email that you were wondering whether maybe it was time to come up with a different system.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a supporter of the playoff system. I've said, look, this stuff happens where 9-7 teams win divisions. It doesn't happen that often. But that was based on the idea that when 9-7 teams that were mediocre won a division, that they would lose in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If we've really reached a point where, and I don't know why this is the case, but where parity means that once teams get into the tournament, we reset everything and all teams are equal, then you have to do something to make the regular season more important. It's fun when Villanova wins the, March Madness as an eighth seed or whatever that was back in 85. But if you had eighth seeds winning March Madness every single year, it wouldn't be as fun. Upsets wouldn't be as special. You don't need to have the best regular season team win the Super Bowl every year, but you want that in most years, one of the five or six best regular season teams wins the Super Bowl.
Well, like 3 years ago, they were talking about tossing around going to 14 teams for the playoffs. And how that would work is the first round would be, you'd have six games instead of four. The number one seeds in each conference would get a bye.
If we've gone to the point where we reset everything in the playoffs, that's even worse.
No, but I'm
now
saying
you're letting even more 8-8 type teams in.
No, but let's say you went to 14 teams, top seed in each conference gets a bye. Number two seed plays number seven seed. You fix it so that if you win your division, your 14 division where the other three teams might stink, you don't get to host a home game. And now you have the second best team playing in round one against a seventh seed.
Well, I think that would make things
that might
better.
Work.
I mean, let's be honest. If you did that this year, Arizona would have been the seventh seed.
Yes.
Tampa Bay and Chicago would have both been seeded higher. than Arizona if they had gotten into the playoffs and we had seeded things not based on who was the division champion.
But then maybe the number one seed is worth a little more if they're the only team that gets a bye week.
How much does the bye week seem to matter? Over the last couple of years, I don't know whether this is just random noise or whether it's meaningful, but the bye week doesn't seem to matter as much as it did 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, any one of these years where weird things happen, you write it off as it's just random statistical noise. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's happened now for 4 years, you start to say to yourself, okay, is this more than just random chance?
You know what? The one thing that seems to keep coming up every year is that these teams, a lot of their guys, they'll have injuries, and then the guys will get healthy just in time for the playoffs. And that seems to be this variable that happens more and more, like with Bob Sanders a couple years
ago. Yeah, true, but it didn't really happen with Arizona. They didn't have anybody.
It kind of did, though, with Edge James. But Edge James basically took 2 months off.
Yeah, but he's not the reason why they've been winning in the playoffs. It's the improved pass defense and Larry Fitzgerald playing ridiculous.
He's in the top 3 or 4 reasons.
But part of that is that Carolina and Atlanta didn't have good run defenses. I don't think Edge James is the difference here, and I don't think Anquan Boldin's face feeling better is the difference. There's no Bob Sanders here who's come back and turned Arizona into the team they were in the first half of the season. This is the same, because in those first 6 games of the season, remember, Edge was the running back. Part of the reason why they didn't play as well after that was that they mistakenly switched to Tim Hightower, and Tim Hightower is just not as good as Edge.
Right.
So this is the same players that were playing for Arizona for the whole season, basically, with the exception of the starting running back.
Maybe, all right, let's figure
out. And Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie going into the starting lineup, but that was like week 8 or 9.
Maybe improvements in conditioning and the way training staffs deal with stuff combined with charter airplanes combined with,
I think
I don't
that
know,
your theory
HGH?
About home field, I think your theory about home field advantage could be part of it.
HGH?
I have no idea. But your theory about whether home field advantage means less in the era of the state-of-the-art stadium, well, I mean, one of the reasons why 6th seeds keep making it to the Super Bowl is that teams in playoffs are winning on the road more than they used to. So if your theory about home field advantage is right in the regular season, then maybe that's having an effect on the playoffs too.
Yeah,
I don't know how to fix it.
And who had the 2 best crowds in the playoffs, Arizona and Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, well, I mean, not in the first Arizona game, but in the championship game, yeah, they were pretty rabid. The Pittsburgh crowd's been great in both games.
I thought the Arizona crowd was good against Atlanta.
Eh.
Better in the next game. But
no,
definitely,
that's definitely better in the next game. But, I mean, I don't know how much effect home field, you know, how much the size of the crowd and the rabidness of the crowd has versus just the natural things that are in home field advantage, like you get to sleep in your own bed and the fact that officials in general seem to be more biased towards home teams in every sport. That's part of where home field advantage comes from.
Mm. I'm sure there's like 20 variables. There's probably like you add up 20 variables. Maybe another one is you just can't get to the Super Bowl anymore unless you have a decent to good QB.
That's true too, but I mean, there are plenty of teams that are out of this that have a decent to good QB. I mean, McNabb is certainly a decent to good. Eli was, except in that game.
Right. Well, maybe out of the 20 variables, that might be one. Like, who's the last? I guess Grossman's the last really bad team that made.
Yeah, and that's a couple years ago. But
and
even
they had two home field.
If you say Eli is a good enough quarterback to make it in 07, then you got to say he's a good enough quarterback to make it in 08. So
I'll tell you, I'm confounded by Eli. I just think you look at the last couple of years and it's
all of New York is confounded by Eli.
Well, nobody has vacillated from truly horrible to, wow, this guy's really good. I mean, he just goes up and down. There's no way to predict it. I guess you can, actually, with the wind.
Maybe. And the fact is he does throw the ball a little higher. And so, you know, without Plaxico Burress there, the tall guy, maybe they're going to be more incompletes. But I don't know how to fix this problem with the playoffs. But to me, it's not that the Cardinals are the problem. It's that after the Giants and then the Colts, each year it's gotten worse. I mean, the Colts, the only thing was the defense changing. Nobody would have ever, you know, denied that that offense was certainly Super Bowl quality. And Pittsburgh was a team that really just, like, lost a tiebreaker to win their division in 05. They were a plenty good team. But as this all starts to build up with year after year of these 6th seeds winning, And like I said, Arizona is in effect an eighth seed because they would have been seeded eighth if you had 16 teams in the playoffs instead of 12. I think it becomes a little bit of a problem for the regular season where it seems like the regular season doesn't mean anything. I mean, let's be honest. Next year, when we get to December, and you hear all the announcers, you know, among the 90 people sitting at the desk on each pregame show telling you how important it is that teams win so that they can get the first round bye, how serious are you going to take that?
It doesn't seem like the bye matters at all. That's been the one strange thing that's developed over the last 5 years.
And they sell that, and they sell that as the reason why you should care about the last couple weeks for a team that's, you know, 12-3 and has won its division already.
Yeah.
But if that's not true, if it's more important to get healthy, then why should teams try hard after they've clinched things? And why should we believe that a game between two teams that have both clinched their divisions is important for the bye, like that Carolina Giants game?
Yeah.
What if that Carolina Giants game was in effect meaningless?
You know, I've noticed the last few years that the number one seed or number two seed, after coming off that bye, they're always a little sloppy in the first half. And I don't know why that started or what the explanation is for that. Because even the Pats-Titans game that they played in like 1 degree or whatever.
Yeah, the Patriots.
How bad the Pats were in that game?
The Patriots weren't against Jacksonville last year. I mean, they were pretty sharp.
Yeah, but that was the 07 Patriots that should have gone 19-0. But like the Giants came out and they just immediately looked bad in that game this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Carolina looked good from the start. They took that touchdown. We were like, okay, well, this is over. And then Arizona comes roaring back, and Jake Delhomme turns into like he's a seventh grader playing on the sand lawns.
I think there's a number of things that they could do, including the 14-team playoff as a possibility. I really think they need to reconfigure these divisions. I don't see how it makes sense that you can only have four teams in a division and one makes the playoffs. It's too much relies on the other three teams potentially stinking. For
the only problem with that is that 32 is such a perfect number for scheduling. So you wonder, I mean, would they go to 36?
Well,
or would they just go to three divisions per conference and then have them be not be even? I mean, it makes scheduling difficult.
What about four divisions total?
You get too much away from the concept of the divisional rivalries where you play twice a year, which I think is really important. I mean, let's be honest, even the new divisions that have only existed for a few years, it's done a pretty good job of creating rivalries that never existed before, like Seattle, San Francisco, or Carolina, Tampa Bay. I mean, those rivalries have only existed for 6 years, and they feel like rivalries because those teams play twice a year. If you get more than five or six teams in a division, you can't have that.
What about keep it at 14 divisions, but you have to win 10 games to host a first-round playoff?
I certainly think that they could go to the point where they could take away the automatic hosting of the first round from division champions. I mean, I think that that's one thing that they could try to do.
You have to win 10 to host a playoff game.
To make the regular season more important.
I like that one. I'm going to advocate that one. All right, so you think the Steelers will win. Will they win by 7? Will they win by 8?
I think so, but I'm much more confident in saying the Steelers will win than in saying that they'll win by more than a touchdown.
Will the total score of the game be higher than, let's say, just for the sake of argument, 47.5?
No.
Okay.
Because as good as the Arizona offense, I just think that as good as the Arizona offense is, the Pittsburgh will stop the run, and they will get a lot of pressure on Warner that will make it tough for him to get the ball to the receivers, even though the receivers are really good. And on the other side, I think that the Pittsburgh offense will have trouble running the ball because the Arizona run defense has been good pretty much all year long. And as far as passing the ball, if Hines Ward is a little gimpy, that's a problem.
All right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't really trust Nate Washington to make the game-changing play in the Super Bowl. Perhaps he will. Nobody thought Timmy Smith would rush for 200 yards either.
Can we say that you guys are potentially doing a gigantic Super Bowl preview on footballoutsiders.com?
There will be a gigantic Super Bowl preview on footballoutsiders.com on Friday. Probably be looking at, you know, what's changed for Arizona. Can we figure out what's real and what's not? And I know that Bill Barnwell watched the entire Arizona-Minnesota game and then watched the entire Arizona-Philadelphia game to compare just exactly what the heck is different between this team that let Tarvaris Jackson throw the ball all over them and then stopped Philadelphia.
Hmm. Are you guys doing the thing on Sunday where you all exchange emails as you watch the game?
Always, always. Probably not as much during the game for the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, there's more of a rooting aspect and less of a let's sit there with our laptops aspect. Hmm. Certainly after the game. We're famous from that for 3 years ago because, of course, it turned into a big anti-officials festival.
Wow.
Our Seattle fans are still bitter and having a hard time rooting for Pittsburgh this year.
All right. Well, we will...
I will say this is one other funny thing about the Steelers. If the Steelers do win the Super Bowl, it is like their ultimate middle finger to the entire NFC West. Because they will pass San Francisco for the most Super Bowl titles. And they will have done it by beating, in the last three Super Bowls, the other three NFC West teams in order.
Huh.
They beat the Rams in 79, Seahawks, and if they win this year, they will beat the Cardinals in order to take the all-time lead from the 49ers. There's a little trivia for everybody.
So we probably won't talk to you again until right near the draft.
Sounds good to me. I mean, you know, I like to talk, but...
I know.
As far as doing the podcast, sounds good to me.
Well, there are no numbers to crunch because the season will be over.
I'll be busy crunching numbers on 2009.
Yes, your big book. All right.
Look out for the Kansas City Chiefs, baby.
Good luck, and we'll talk to you this spring. Aaron Schatz, footballoutsiders.com. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, man.
All right, now let's go to our cleanup hitter. It's been the year of Lombardi, and he's live in Tampa. He's going to be calling from a cell phone on Media Day. Lombardi, are you there?
I am here reporting live from Tampa, Florida, with all the non-stories that will become big stories today.
What's the weather like there?
Hot. It's typical Florida, 75, hot, you know, humid. But it's always good to get out of the East Coast a little bit and get away from that.
So you're at Media Day. Are you just being deluged with people who need Lombardi sound bites?
No, I'm not. I'm just kind of watching it, observing it from afar. No, I've done very little stuff today, so keeping a very low profile. I had to do a podcast today. I didn't want to use all my good stuff up until I did the podcast.
Why weren't you wearing your Year of Lombardi football jersey?
I haven't gotten it made yet. I'm waiting for it to get finalized. Get the right color combinations. Yeah, I thought I'd do the Italian flag as a jersey, you know? Make it look like that.
You should have hired two strippers from Mons Venus. You could have showed up in your football jersey. You're a Lombardi, made a big splash.
I have a feeling Mons Venus is going to be a busy place this week, along with every other one. I'm sure that they've opened up a couple trailers at strip clubs this week, too, just to handle the overflow.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how many people are down there and how many people are spending money. Because the way the economy's going, you know, the porn industry is basically about to go under. Unless they could come up with some bankruptcy, whatever, some bailouts.
According to Larry Fenton, it takes some guts to stand in front of Congress and tell them that. But, you
Absolutely.
Know, tickets today, from what I heard, are relatively going for almost face value down here, which is rare. So expect a lot of Steelers fans in the stands.
Oh, it's perfect for Steelers fans. You got cheap tickets. Got a million motels and weird hotels and all that stuff down there. Like, this could be a home game for the Steelers. Don't you think?
I think it might be. Yeah, I think because of the ticket prices and because they travel so well, that I would believe it would be a home game for them because you know they always travel and now with these ticket prices, I mean, when are you going to be able to see a Super Bowl for about $200 or $300 over the face value of a ticket? Very rare.
All right, so here's my checklist for you for this week. You need to break a major story. You need,
okay.
I don't want to say a fist fight, but some sort of altercation during the week with like Jay Glazer or Peter King. Maybe like a shoving match. Something.
I don't think so.
Something, I don't know.
I do have a little nugget for your viewers today. I understand Floyd Reese is going to take the senior advisor job for your Patriots.
What?
Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm being dead serious. Yes, I am. And on Showtime this week, I think I have a pretty good story tomorrow if you watch Showtime that I think will be compelling. But those are my two nuggets for the week.
Showtime's inside the NFL, you mean?
Inside the NFL, yes.
Boy, Floyd Reese is really going to put the senior in the term senior advisor. and then my third Lombardi request is that some sort of controversial picture that'll end up on a sports blog. Like maybe you you doing shots with Terrell Owens or something. I think those are your three things you need to concentrate on this week. So how are you feeling about the game?
You know, I feel well. I think I've got a good handle on what how each team matches up. I've done a lot of tape work, and I think I have an idea of how the game's going to go. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to be right, but I think I have an idea how the game will go.
Well, why don't you tell us?
Well, you know, here's the interesting factor about the game. The Steelers are a team that you cannot run the football on. And even though everybody thinks the Cardinals have improved their running game since the playoffs have started, the reality of that is they averaged 3.1 per carry before the playoffs started. They averaged 3.1 per carry in the playoffs.
Mm.
So they just run it a little bit more, but they've also had the lead to let them run it a little bit more. So the thing that works in the Cardinals' favor here a little bit is the fact that you can't run the ball on Pittsburgh, and the Cardinals will make no illusions to, in fact, trying to run the ball. And I believe that the Cardinals, because of their passing game, set up to attack the one area of weakness that the Steelers have. And if the Cardinals can protect the passer like they did against Philadelphia, they will have a chance to hang around in this game and hopefully find a way to win it.
Do you think they will be able to do that?
I think at the end of the day, the Steelers, like they have done against Baltimore and against other teams, have too much down the stretch. But I don't think this game's as mismatched as many people feel it is. I think this is a closer game than people think because of the area of strength the Cardinals have is one of the areas of slight weakness that the Steelers have. The Steelers are the 21st ranked defense, one of the only statistics you can find in the bottom 20 of 2-minute defense, which means when you go out at the end of each half, they're 21st in allowing yards and points. And that instance is what the Cardinals do best. They attack with their passing game. And if they can protect, which they did against Philadelphia, which they did when they played them in Arizona 2 years ago, I think they'll have a chance to move the football on.
Well, remember what you said in last week's podcast about how in the first half of the Eagles game, the Eagles were overloading one side and the Cards figured out how to handle that. And then the second half, the Eagles switched it and they came from all directions and the Cards really couldn't figure it out. Isn't that what the Steelers do?
Well, the Steelers do, but remember now, when Ken Wisenhunt has been brought up under the playing against this system. When Ken Wisenhunt coached at Pittsburgh, the first day of training camp, they would go out to practice and they'd have to handle every one of Dick LeBeau's blitzes. There wasn't a progression of installation. So therefore, Wisenhunt has seen all these blitzes before, and they can tailor their protections this week with 2 weeks to handle those type of situations. And I think that's something they'll do. If they protect Kurt Warner, he will make throws in the game. There's no doubt.
How much of an advantage is that he coached against this guy every day in practice for 4 or 5 years, whatever it was?
I think it's huge. I think it's huge. I think it's huge from this standpoint. He knows how the guy likes to call the game. He knows how the guy thinks. And most importantly, he knows how the guy reacts to a game. And that will really weigh into his framework of how he shapes this game plan.
What about knowing the personnel?
Another advantage. I think he definitely will know that. He'll know exactly what they're doing with Palamoa. He's watched this guy practice. And if you get a handle on what Palamoa is doing, then you'll get a handle on what the Steelers are doing on defense. And I think that's something that adds credence to Wisenhunt being able to attack this team, which he did last year in Arizona.
When you watch the tape, I'm sure you're in an NFL. You go to NFL Films in Jersey and you just plow through these tapes. How did you feel about Roethlisberger in those two playoff games?
I thought he was effective. I didn't think he was great. I thought he was effective. A couple times the throws he made against Baltimore could have easily been intercepted. I thought they were desperation type throws, but he made the plays. Much like I thought that Joe Flacco's throws against Tennessee could have easily been intercepted. I think that's the key denominator in the game is Ben Roethlisberger. Can he protect the ball? Can he hold on to the football in the pocket? The Steelers give up a ton of sacks. Roethlisberger's the number one fumbler in the NFL. And guess what, Bill? The Arizona Cardinals are the number one team in the NFL forcing fumbles.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. I think I think the real key to the game is what happens with Hines Ward and what they get out of him. But Roethlisberger, is a little sketchy to me, and he's had some stink bombs in big games. I didn't think he played that well against Baltimore. The biggest play he made was kind of a fluke play, that play where he's running around, he threw it toward, I think it was Holmes, and the Baltimore guy kind of fell down, but he could have intercepted it, and it was just a weird play. It wasn't like a play that kind of was intended to happen. So if I'm Arizona, you feel like if you just go after Roethlisberger and maybe get lucky on that one bomb pass that they always seem to complete to Nate Washington, I think they could stay in the game.
That's the key. They could stay in the game. And the other factor is when you play Pittsburgh, they're 23rd in the league in drop passes. There's no guarantee they're going to catch all the balls that they get thrown to them. And that helps an Arizona defense, which takes a ton of chances. And if Arizona can gain two extra possessions with turnovers, that puts them in a chance to start mounting points. Now, the other area that I think people haven't talked about that favor the Cardinals is the special teams. The Cardinals are not a great kicking game team. However, the Steelers are a disaster. They're 29th in kickoff returns. They're 31st in punt returns. And they've allowed big plays in each game in the playoffs that they've played in both phases. They had the long return by Leonard on the punt, and then Sproles had the kickoff return. So that creates field position. And as Bill Parcells used to talk about, those hidden yards are going to be key for the Arizona Cardinals. They need to be able to drive the ball down the field. If they've got to go 80 yards, it's not going to work. But if they only have to go 40 yards to get points, that certainly weighs a great advantage.
And what's weird about all those stats you just said is that the Steelers actually somehow got two big plays from their special teams that they normally don't get anything out of. So it's almost like, all right, they hit lightning in a bottle twice. Does it happen three times in the Super Bowl? Probably not. You know? So you got the Cardinals have an advantage there. They have an advantage with the Wisenhunt thing. They have an advantage if Hines Ward isn't 100% healthy, and nobody knows. I mean,
let's understand. Hines Ward will not be 100%. It's how well Hines Ward plays at 70 to 75% is going to be the key determining factor. He's not going to be 100% healthy.
I don't like Hines Ward at 70%. I think that really hurts him. I think he's one of those guys that, you know, they feed off his intensity, and he's one of those guys that always maximized the abilities that he had. And now if you're reducing those abilities by 30%, I don't know if he's – I just don't think he has as big of an impact. I mean, that's not rocket science saying that. But, you know, I don't know if he makes those extra 2-3 third down catches that he usually makes during a Steelers game. And if they don't get those, where are they getting them?
Right.
Where do they get them? I mean, who steps up?
Well, you know, Nate Washington's not always reliable with the ball. Santonio Holmes double catches too many passes. He's made some big plays down this playoff stretch, but I think he's the guy they're going to look to make plays. And, of course, Heath Miller. That's probably the biggest area the Cardinals can't match up to is Heath Miller. They don't really have anybody who can take him away from the game. And the other guy is Willie Parker. The Cardinals will take all their chances to handle that running game and put the ball back in Big Ben's hands. And Willie Parker certainly plays a big factor if they can't really establish this running game. They cannot let Ben throw this ball 55 times because he'll turn it over.
Weird Super Bowl, super technical question. So the Cardinals are down to like their 40th string tight end. And that kind of happened between round two and round three, and it didn't really hurt them in round three. But against the Steelers with 2 weeks, and the Steelers have time to think about it, and they know, like, in short yardage, this crappy whoever the tight end is going to be in there, and the guy's not going to hurt them in the pass game. Can you win the Super Bowl without even having, like a below-average tight end?
Well, what the Cardinals will probably do is move Elton Brown, the offensive guard, out to tight end and play him there and just understand that he's a blocker and help in protection. They don't want to put a lesser player in this game to handle the outside rushers of Lamar Woodley and James Harrison. That's a bad matchup. So instead of kidding yourselves thinking this guy is going to be a go out and catch a ball and think normally like a high school team would think, oh, there's our tight end, let's throw him the ball. You got to think a little different. This is the Super Bowl. You got to get the right matchup on Harrison. You got to get the right matchup on Woodley. And I think and believe that they'll move Elton Brown out in some situations and play him at tight end particularly in the goal line, but even more when they go to three receivers to allow themselves a chance to protect and help in protection.
So you're saying they go with basically a six-man offensive line?
Which is smart to do. The Redskins made a living of it all through the 80s. Don Warren was basically an offensive tackle. When you've got a really good football team and you've got three good receivers and you've got somebody who can run, the tight end going out the route is the least most important factor. You need a guy who can pass protect and help on the edges, because if you don't, it hurts you. The Chargers gave up the one sack because Brandon Malamanga wasn't able to handle James Harrison. That became a problem, beat him inside. You want a tight end that can block, especially against a team like the Steelers, because it helps your tackles not have to always be on islands.
Okay, so if you're the Steelers, and you know the Cards are probably going with a six-man offensive line, you know basically that removes the tight end from the offense. Doesn't that help you?
Well, it does, but you still have to. We know this. If Larry Fitzgerald double covered, triple covered, or quadruple covered, if the ball throws him, he'll catch it. So, you know, it's more about the Cardinals protecting, and it's more about Warner having time to throw the ball than it is about thinking that we can double all the receivers. Because even if you double Larry Fitzgerald, he's still going to make the play.
Do the Steelers have the right personnel to shut down Fitzgerald or at least temper him?
They have the right framework of a defense. They can rush the passer, and that's really the only way you're stopping Larry Fitzgerald. You got to not allow him a free release off the football. But more important than that, you've got to be able to pressure Warner into throwing the ball sooner than he wants to throw it, because if he throws it too quickly, you can make a play on the ball. This game's going to challenge the Steelers' defensive backs to play a game in balance and be under control, not necessarily be the best coverage team. They've got to tackle and be in balance. That's their mission in this game, because when the ball is in the air, Larry Fitzgerald's going to win 99.9% of those jumps. You've got to be in position, and hopefully the pressure will force the ball to come out early.
Single most important player for the Cardinals who has to have a good game for them to win?
There are five offensive linemen. They have to block. They have to handle protection. The only way the Cardinals win is in pass protection. They have to pass protect. If Kurt Warner is on his back two of the first four plays of the game's over. If they can't protect, they've got to find a way to protect.
Single most important player for the Steelers?
Big Ben not turning the ball over. Cannot fumble, cannot throw a dumb pass, cannot allow the Arizona Cardinals an extra possession, which they desperately need to be able to score enough points to win the game. If Ben just plays within himself like he did the last 8 weeks of the season, they can win the game. If he tries to become Ben with all this hype that he didn't play a great Super Bowl the last time, that he wants to try to force and make a play, that's the way the Steelers lose. The Steelers have watched Jake Delhomme do this repeatedly. I promise you, since the game ended against the Ravens, the Steelers have probably watched the Panther game 5,000 times, because this is what we cannot do to this will cost us the Super Bowl.
Most underrated player on either team that you think will have a huge impact on this game?
Well, I would think the special teams of the Cardinals. They have to generate 125 yards of hidden offense. Steve Breaston would be the guy, the focal point. The punt returns, the kick returns, Rogers Cromartie, if they use him in this area also. They've got to generate 125 yards of hidden yards somewhere in this field.
Team most likely to execute a trick play that will have a huge impact on the game?
Oh, the Steelers, they're so good at it. They do it. They have, you know, when you have so many guys that have played quarterback like Hines Ward has, and of course they had Randall L before, but when you have that versatility within your team, it makes it very difficult. This is two teams that know each other, run a ton of trick plays. So I think both teams are going to be prepared. There'll be creativity at its highest level.
Earlier in the podcast, Cousin Sal unveiled his lock Super Bowl prop of Super Bowl 43 or 44. What is it, 43? 43. Mm-hmm. Minus 300, which means you have to bet 300 to win 100, that Gary Russell will not score a touchdown. What do you think of that?
I would think that's correct. I would think the Cardinals defensively allow big plays. That's who they are. They either stop you for a negative play or they give up a big play. So that you rarely do they just methodically drive the ball down the field. So I think that Heath Miller has a better chance of making a touchdown catch in the red area. I think Willie Parker has a chance of running a 40-yard run in than I would do Gary Russell scoring from the one-inch line.
All right. So I don't know if you want to tell who you're picking now or you want to wait for us to read it on nationalfootballpost.com, but it seems like you feel the Cardinals are going to be in this game.
I really do. I think the Cardinals have the great, you know, he's got the great halftime speech. He understands what he's dealing with. This isn't like something that's new to him. He knows how to handle the Steelers. He's not intimidated by the Steelers. He knows the right matchups. I think the Steelers have the better team, but the Steelers have some problems too, and I think oftentimes at a Super Bowl, those problems tend to get washed away and they're not realistic. I really believe that the Steelers, if they don't turn the ball over, they win this game. It'll be a closer game. However, if mistakes happen, I don't underestimate the Arizona Cardinals.
So you like Cards +7 at the very least?
You know, I'm not a betting man, but that's the way I'm talking because I think the Cardinals have enough of their football team to be able to score points and make big plays, which is something you have to do against the Steelers. Forget the 10 and 12 play drives against the Steelers. You need to make big plays. You need to have hidden yards. You need to return the ball. You need to do some things that help your team. You just can't think you're going to get out there at the 20 and go 12 plays and score and eat up 12 minutes of the clock. That's not happening against this great defense.
I like the phrase hidden yards. Did you patent that? I don't think I've heard that one. I like hidden yards.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
That's a Bill Parcellsism. I'll have to give him credit for it. But really, when you look at a stat sheet and you see those special teams and return yards, they never show up on offense or defense, but they're the hidden yards that orchestrate field position. And when you're playing against a great defense, you need every advantage you can gain from that. And if they can, instead of having the ball at the 30, if they get it at the 45 because of those plus 15 yards, and now we only have to go 30 yards to kick a field goal, that hidden yards are all the most important.
You know who is my favorite hidden yards team of all time? The team that stuffed 14 blasts, the 2001 New England Patriots. They mastered the hidden yards. Troy Brown was like the hidden yards MVP of all time. They always only had to go like 30 yards to put up points.
I haven't heard anybody down here yet talk about the kicking game, and the Steelers are so bad at covering kicks and so bad at covering punts that it just seems to me that way Steve Buston returns the ball so effectively, J.J. Arrington can do some things returning the football, that's the one area that when the Cardinals put their game plan together last Monday, we got to dominate this area. This is what we have to do.
And also, we're probably not going to run the ball, so let's just figure out how we can throw it.
Right.
All right.
There's no sense in trying to run it. We got to throw it. All right?
Mike Lombardi, go out there. I want you to do as many interviews as possible. I want you to get into a sports blog. I want you to get into a Chevy match with Jay Glazer. And we'll text during the game, and we'll talk to you next week. I hope you're right. I think you've almost kind of talked me into the Cardinals. Almost.
I've got my mission accomplished. Thank you.
Hey, and one more thing. Elton Brand had a quote today. He thinks the Sixers are coming together.
Yeah, they're really coming together. They win one, lose one. 500, they're the Phil Negro of the NBA.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy Tampa. Try to get in trouble.
Target to sign off.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.